The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod
Yourself a gun,
a Sopranos podcast where Vince interrupts me every single time I do the title of the show.
That's how we do it. That's our intro. Accept it.
It is. People love it. It's sing-songy and it's fun. We are the world's only Sopranos podcast that we know of, and that's because we refuse to go into the podcast store and find other ones. We watch every single episode of The Sopranos and we talk about it. At this point, hopefully, you've been around for a while, you know what we do. And if you're new, hi, welcome to the pod. Speaking of new, we have a wonderful guest in the studio tonight. And by the studio, I mean, in some quarantine location, in America, I assume. Bobby Big Wheel is here.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. And if you are new to this podcast, it is the only Sopranos podcast there is. And yeah. While Bobby Big Wheel is my internet name, my real name is Michael Imperioli. So you're listening to Michael Imperioli talk about The Sopranos.
Wow, you sound so much less Italian in person.
Yeah, well, he's acting Vince.
Oh,
duh.
Shoot.
It's just a character. In real life, he sounds more just kind of like your standard issue Jew.
Yeah. You know? Few people know that I'm a Jew from Connecticut. I'm just that good of an actor.
Yeah. I mean, you are a fantastic actor. And unfortunately, this particular episode doesn't feature a lot of Michael Imperioli. Yeah.
He actually pronounces it Italian in real life.
Does he?
Yeah. All the other stuff's just acting.
Hey, if you guys missed me, watch Summer of Sam, another movie that Michael Imperioli, was in.
And I'm Steve Sharipa. Sharipa?
Sharipa, I think. Anyway.
Sharipa?
Bobby Bacala.
Before we get this podcast fully started and fully off the rails, I would be remiss if we did not play the theme song. Pod. Your mama always said you'd be there. Pod. Pod. Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. Hell to the yeah.
I love that theme. By the way, so the funniest thing to me about the actual Sopranos theme song is, like, David Chase, you know, he's like this super into music guy, like musician. And he chose, like, I think it was like in the 90s, people thought it's like every genre of music is converging into one. The future of music is Alabama 3. And he chose the dumbest fucking song to be the theme. Like, if that weren't the theme song to The Sopranos, can you imagine going to your friend and be like, hey, man, you got to check out this song on Spotify called...
Oh, how long is it? Oh, 7 minutes? Fuck this.
Yeah, that, I think it was like
how much of it is spoken word?
Yeah.
It was like when Howard Stern had that I'm a Tortured Man song from the Private Parts.
Yeah.
Soundtrack. Like that was a shorter era, like this electronic samples and like quasi indie rock music was shorter than like the swing revival. Thank God.
Yeah, it was, it really did feel like it was, the decision was made when, you know, new metal acts were headlining Woodstock, you know? Yeah. So they were pretty sure that this was the music of the future, that all in the future, every genre is going to be mashed together. It's got to have a little bit of rap in it. It's got to have a little bit of a house beat going on. It's got to have a guy.
Spend your love on kind. Spend your love on you gotta have like
the, oh me oh my
yeah there's gotta be a random Jamaican rap guy behind
is,
Mark
yeah that is surprising that there's no guy in the background who's just like up all the gun I got the gun
I do like hey, oh. I do, you gotta have a Jamaican hype man. I would be happy if every song had a Jamaican hype man in the back.
Gun you got yourself a gun.
Well, I bring it up though because the opening song to this episode, I actually felt like would have been a much better Sopranos theme song.
I feel like most of their music choices would have been better theme songs.
Anything.
In general, there's a lot of great music on this show, and it's ironic that you have to start it off with one of the worst songs ever recorded. At the same time, and we've said this before, it is also like an iconic song. It's like it's a song that does get me pumped up, but only because the show is good.
Right.
You know?
But you know what?
Like if that had been the theme song to Arliss, we would have paid it.
What is the theme song to Arliss anyway?
I don't know if it had a theme song.
Was it Money by like Pink Floyd, the Pink Floyd version of Money?
I mean, that would have been sick. Yeah. I probably would have watched the show then.
Feels like on brand for Arliss. Anyway, we got to do, before we get into too much about this episode.
We'll say today we are watching from season 2, episode 11, House Arrest, which premiered on March 26th, the year 2000. And Vince, I think it's time for us to take a little trip in the Wayback Machine. But before we do, I just want to point out, I finally made a bumper and I've decided to rename it this section, the Remember When Machine.
All right, here it is. The Remember When Machine. First time ever.
What? Walk, teddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoe, bop. Remember then.
Remember. Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
Okay, so it's a little long, I'll admit.
I feel attacked by the fact that it starts with them shouting WAP 4 times.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I don't know why I never noticed this before, but doo-wop is just a racist term for Italians. Like, because like WAP is Italian. Doo-wop is just like Italian music. Am I wrong?
Wait,
about
really?
That?
I did not know that. If so.
I mean, that sounds right. They do say WAP a lot and they are Italians. I don't know.
We call it, you know, doo-wop or Dago jazz.
All right. So what was happening March 26, 2000?
March 26, 2000. I went a little deeper on the headlines than you like me to go, but I don't care.
I don't care.
From the New York Post, Hill shoots ahead mayor. Sorry, Hill. There should be a comma in here. Hill shoots ahead mayor sags in wake of latest cop slaying. That was the Senate race.
What?
That Hillary was running against Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, Hill is Hillary?
Yep. And she has surged ahead of Mayor Giuliani with the latest police shooting dealing a savage blow to the mayor's Senate dreams. A stunning new Post poll shows. Yeah, she's up 3 points at this point.
Wow.
This is, so wait, was...
We might
was...
have saved history if Rudy Giuliani wins that Senate race.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know he ran for Senate.
Yeah, that's he crazy. Ran and then he dropped out because he said he had prostate cancer, though the rumor at the time was like, oh, they're going to like find all the mob tie stuff. And And now we actually find out it wasn't so much mob ties, it's just that every other aspect of his life was totally corrupt, absent the mafia.
Yeah, you have to imagine that if you're open about marrying and fucking your cousin, what are you not open about? You know, like what are you not telling us when this is something that's just out there? for everyone to see.
Also, if Rudy Giuliani wins that Senate race, he's not mayor on 9/11, and so people just like still kind of hate him.
Yeah, that's see, I always do these games. Like, I think the Buffalo Bills are actually the key to like America going wrong. Like, because if the Buffalo Bills had won that their fourth Super Bowl that they were uh-huh. in, Timothy McVeigh might never have bombed the Oklahoma City Federal Building. And if Donald Trump had been allowed to buy the Buffalo Bills like he wanted to, he may have never gone into politics.
Basically, anything before Trump was elected is like dramatic irony in real life.
Right.
Where like we know it ends really badly and we're just kind of like, like, oh, these poor characters, they don't know that we're all just kind of circling the drain here.
Yeah, that's just every time you read a history book, you're just like, idiots. And of course, we are the idiots.
Yep, that's us. Another that's headline us. From the Post. This is a very New York Posty headline. I don't know if it'll come through, the spellings. Anti-Muslim attacks turn Brooklyn into Mosque Owl.
Wow. Mosque hyphen owl.
Yeah.
Fucking A, dude.
Which
fucking
I don't even A. know why that. I don't know what that has to do with Moscow, Russia. But it was interesting to see that they were attacking mosques well before 9/11.
Well, wasn't what was that war in Chechnya? Wasn't that happening at this time?
Yeah, I think it was more like residual, like the Ayatollah Asahola T-shirt era.
No, sure. I mean, great T-shirt, but it is. I just wonder if maybe Moscow had a lot of like anti-Muslim sentiment at the time because of Chechnya.
New York Post headline writers are really that deep.
Yeah, I don't think they were expecting their readers to know that.
Yeah, they're not fact-checking their shitty pun headlines.
Yeah. And another, sign of things to come from the LA Times, goodwill towards U.S. is dwindling globally. Oh, boy.
I wonder if that'll ever improve.
Okay, now we get everyone to pity us.
Yeah, that's kind of nice.
We went into the crevasse there, and now everyone just kind of feels bad for us.
Yeah, I know. I think, especially now that we have like the most deaths and the most cases of coronavirus and everything, I wonder if like now, you know, when this is all over, we'll be able to like travel to Europe again instead of people being like disgusting fat Americans. They'll be like, "Aw, look at how cute they are in real life. Oh, you sad from all your dead grandparents, huh? That might be so sad for you. They're just petting us." What were the top movies at the time?
The top movies at the time, March 26, 2000, were Aaron Brockovich in its second weekend, narrowly edged out Romeo Must Die.
Shit.
Yeah, and Final Destination coming in at number three.
Dope-ass movie, dude. Dope-ass movie.
Yeah.
Think about those ways to die all the time, man.
Yeah. Top song, still Say My Name by Destiny's Child.
That slapped. That was a good song.
That's a banger.
But that was what was going on. That was what was going on in America at the time. A little bit of context for you. And now let's get into it. From season 2, episode 11, this is House Arrest. And Vince, why don't you read the synopsis real quick?
Yeah, so in this episode, having dodged a legal bullet, Tony is advised by his lawyer to spend more time at his businesses. Junior looks for diversions to relieve the tedium of house arrest and eventually finds one in the company of a police widow. Meanwhile, Melfi's problems boil over while eating dinner with her son.
Yeah. So this is an interesting episode. I actually did like it, even though it did feel like it was kind of in that, these like episodes that are right before the end or like, you know, right in the middle of the season where you're not sure how much plot they're going to move forward. And if they are instead, this is an episode that's just kind of like filled with this being stuck motif. So this is like, it's basically an episode about how the Soprano family is trapped in a prison of their own making. So here are.
Oh, shit. That's so deep, dude.
Dude, I'm so fucking deep with it.
Do you want to take my job as a professional critic?
I thought about it, but then it took me so long to write this that I was like, oh, no, dude, I'd rather die. I'd literally rather die than do what you do.
Do you want to talk about symbolism or motifs?
Dude, first of all, I just pulled motif out of my ass.
We're hoping to go into some color theory.
Yeah, oh, I got some theories about some colors, dude. So here are the Bada B stories real quick. Tony, so it's all about being trapped, right? So Tony is trapped in his office and trapped with Richie. Richie is about to be trapped in a brand new house with Janice. Melfi is trapped in alcoholism and her petit bourgeois ways. Bobby is trapped with Junior, and Junior is trapped in his home, trapped in his broken down, horny old body, and trapped at one point in the garbage disposal.
Solid. That's a solid plot line.
Yeah, I think so too. So general thoughts. This episode is very much so about what gangsters and people around gangsters do with their time with their idle time. It's like a lot about. It's very idle hands are the devil's playthings.
Mm-hmm. I thought this was a very like Scorsese episode, at least in terms of the music. Like this one felt like the most Scorsese cutscene of any of the Sopranos episodes.
Oh, sure.
So far.
Yeah.
It had that song that Bob Dylan song. You're going to have to sell somebody. And it reminded me that I fucking hate Bob Dylan. I just hate him.
I'm glad I didn't have to be the one to say it this time.
He's not a good singer.
He's not a good singer. And yes, he's. I guess he's a good songwriter. Here's the thing. I enjoy his kind of bad singing. This is what I'll say. I hate a confident Bob Dylan. I really enjoyed the kind of folk song Bob Dylan, because he had like a really unique thing about him. And
when
like,
he was goofing off doing scatty stuff, that was kind of good. And then people thought like he was super deep, and that's
it's music for people who'd rather be reading a book.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's music for people who accidentally turn on a music channel on their way to NPR. It's not.
I disagree. I think he was doing like goofy drunk poetry, which was probably pretty fun
the '60s at the time,
but then people liked the songs, so then they kept pulling like Charles Manson and trying to find the secret hidden message inside it, and I think it's Bob Dylan fandom that annoys me much more than Bob Dylan himself.
That's true too, but I mean the song itself is just it's this very it's this bluesy fucking boring ass song about like it may be the devil or it like was this I wonder if it was like written at a time when he was like starting to get into Jesus or something. I don't know, but it really pissed
me
off.
I think that was kind of his I'm like really Christian now era.
Got into Jesus? I didn't even know that.
He had a
Jesus era.
Yeah. And then what's really annoys me, because he never really had he only was Jewish, like he was secular Jewish, but he never had like a Jewish era, did he? Like he just Jewish.
He became like super pro-Israel in the 80s.
Oh, Jesus.
All the boomer phases. That's what the annoying thing about Bob Dylan.
Did he have a Reagan era too? Was he just like,
I don't think he went that far.
You're going to have to trickle down some economics.
It's like if you meet a Bob Dylan fan, it's like, I get it, man. The 60s were awesome. I had to be there.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Fed Chairman, can you slash some interest rates for me? That's so stupid.
Okay, but Bob Dylan aside, you got this song during the trash scene at the beginning.
I love that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, great song.
I mean, that's just a solid intro song for any show, I think. That's
Should have been the theme.
Yeah, The Pretenders, Space Invader.
It's a great song, and the episode opens up with a giant dump truck dumping garbage in front of some sort of food place.
Yeah, Middle Eastern guy. So like I think the reason
7-Eleven.
Yeah, I think the reason it feels so Scorsese to me is because it's got a lot of extended needle drop scenes of gangsters, mm-hmm. Of like tracking shots of gangsters doing gangster shit. And yeah, for sure. I always enjoy that because it's like they're not doing anything, but you put the Pretender song over them just like dumping trash into a parking lot, and you're like, oh man, this gangster life is so glamorous.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun when you're just listening to good music while you're doing, you know, like petty bullshit.
And this
episode destroys
is,
small businesses. Yeah.
And it's ultimately about just like how much it rocks to be Tony when he doesn't have to like really do anything.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, it opens with the guy, you know, basically dumping all the trash and whatnot. And so Richie is kind of using Barone sanitation, you know, to either do various pranks like that, where he just dumps it from a guy who complained about his, like, you know, garbage pickup not being on time, or he's using it to sell cocaine. So that's what Richie is up to.
What does that look like exactly, selling cocaine on a trash route? I kind of wanted them to go into that. Does that mean he's like wholesaling it off the back? Like, does the cocaine dealer need a ride and the trash is like a, like what, like why do you need the trash at, like how does the trash,
maybe I think it's like a wholesale thing where, like, you know, the dealers, like you have dealers at various points on the route, and you just kind of like, it cuts down on your transpo, the
right,
the cops aren't gonna pull over the dump truck.
He's selling kilos, you know, but But I mean, it kind of makes sense. It's also like, you know, it's a trash truck. So I imagine it'd be hard for like a drug sniffing dog.
Smell that, it. That checks out. All right, I'll go with that.
I mean,
because otherwise I'm like, man, this is just like the height of laziness when you can't take a separate car to do your like cocaine drop off.
you thought they were just trying to save gas money?
Well, I don't know. I couldn't figure out like how the trash, why the trash helped the cocaine distribution.
In the 90s, Coke was so low margin, you know, just like you needed every competitive advantage you had.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I definitely could see how that might be confusing, but it felt to me like it was pulled straight from like a headline. Like this is something that probably did happen. So Tony realizes after talking to his lawyer.
So he gives him, you know, as someone who still is technically a lawyer for the next 4 months or so, but I consider it to be pretty bad legal advice, where he's like, you know, so I think the gist of it is, you know, you just got off a murder rap, so, you know, keep the police off you. So he's like, oh, instead of hanging out in a pork store, hang out at a waste management company.
Right.
As if that's going to get the FBI to stop surveilling you.
Like, yeah, it was. I think he mentioned specifically, so his name is Neil Mink. And he mentioned specifically, like, stop hanging out at the strip club, which part of me goes like, all right, first of all, just because there's titties everywhere doesn't mean it's like you're up to no good. There's a lot of like upstanding citizens who just want to see some titties.
Sure.
Just throwing that out there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, the idea is like, listen, you want to stay away from, you know, doing any illegal shit, you know, hide out for a little bit.
You want to show up at your no-show job, I think. Is the
right.
Basic.
To me, it's like, why don't you show up to that front that we have for all of our business? Like, show up to the money laundromat. There's nothing weird about that.
And like in the Northeast, like commercial waste management is notoriously mobbed up.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And also it's like, you know, say, like, it's not like the FBI can't like drive over to wherever he is and like have the van with like all the surveillance equipment in it. Like, I mean, is the theme of this episode also everyone's kind of lazy?
Yeah.
I'm only selling coke if it's on the trash route.
Well, it's like
FBI, you're just gonna drive out to the waste management building.
So what does it mean? Like, if you're a mobbed up, you know, waste management company, like, what is the scam there? Just that you have like an artificial monopoly or what?
Yeah, actually. So, I mean, they're all super corrupt. And they basically, it's almost like a cartel where they kind of split up routes and they, stiff like business owners, and it's really expensive to get rid of trash. So I'm from Connecticut, and there, like a decade ago, there's a minor league hockey team called the Trashers, owned by a local like waste management guy, and they had to fold in the middle of the season because they found out it was a mob front.
Oh, that sucks. So the team never got to go into the playoffs?
Yeah.
Were they good?
I mean, that would be a good move. You know, maybe you could do a screenplay of that. Just like you're playing for a mob front hockey team and then like the FBI shuts you down, but you got to win like your last game just to like save yeah. the face.
You got to save the waste management company.
Nowadays, the mobster would just start a GoFundMe. And, you know, it's just, I think it's not quite the same. But yeah, so the fact is that Tony has to go back to his office at Barone Sanitation. And so.
Which turns out he doesn't like it, which is hilarious because the entire reason that you get into the mafia, I assume, is that so you can avoid doing any real actual work.
And right, then, which he does avoid doing actual work while he's there.
Yes.
I mean, you know,
but he seems like he's all upset and he's having like a crisis of conscience because he doesn't get to do any of the things he loves, which I guess is, you know, hang out at strip clubs and whack snitches.
Yeah. I mean, it's because of the fact, and they get into this in the episode with Dr. Melfi, is that he is now that he's not in the action, he is alone with his thoughts. And just Tony Soprano being alone with all of the things that stress him out. Now he has time to think about how, oh, fuck, Richie is going to be in my life forever because he's marrying my goddamn piece of shit sister, Janice. And, oh, shit. You know, Richie is still pulling all this bullshit and you know, meanwhile, he's given himself a terrible, terrible rash, just scratching up a storm on his arm and using a bunch of different implements. And as a guy who has eczema, I have to say that, like, there are a few moments in there with that I'm like, ooh, that probably feels so good. Like when he takes the little shoe polisher.
Oh, yeah.
First he's shining his shoes and then he puts it right on his arm where the rash is. And I'm like, that has got to feel heavenly.
I wonder if this was the inspiration for John Turturro's character in The Night Of.
What do you mean?
Oh, like where a skin condition is actually like a big character thing?
Yeah, like his entire character is like guy with a skin condition.
Oh,
God, that show
sucked.
That's
right. I totally forgot about that. Fuck. Yeah, dude, that drove me crazy. That goddamn series, like, everything
so
that had to do with the rash pissed me off because I was just like, I'm uncomfortable just watching this, and I already have rashes all over my body. I don't need to see a worse case.
I don't need to see gross feet. Like,
I don't.
Yeah, that's when I tuned out. I'm like, I'm sure it's a lovely show, but I don't got to see John Turturro's gross feet.
Yeah.
And you know who else has a thing about feet? Junior Soprano.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the episode also starts off with Junior Soprano has just come out of a operation where I guess he had a stent put in. And he is, you know, basically he's still under house arrest. And so they, you know, they strap him up again, you know, with the ankle monitor. And now he's also dealing with sleep apnea. And I've noticed, and I don't know if you guys noticed it. Did you guys notice that there were a lot of hot, helpful blondes in this episode?
Yeah, well, of course.
So you had his nurse, Junior's nurse, who was the one who was like helping him adjust the sleep apnea machine. You had Tony had a blonde nurse who told him to lose some weight.
I thought that was a doctor who told him to lose weight.
Yeah.
Oh, it could
unclear.
Have been
unclear. I think it was a doctor. She had a stethoscope. I don't know. She seemed like doctorish to me.
Yeah, yeah. So Tony's
you
Tony's
sexist
hot,
ass.
I'm sorry. Oh my God. I'm so sorry. And then also Tony's assistant, the secretary, was also a
Connie.
Hot.
Yeah.
Connie
was well cast because she has that like that strange like quasi midget Italian thing going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that to me that leads me to my first question actually. When she's first introduced, the owner or the guy who actually runs Barone Sanitation says that she is a born again Christian.
Uh huh.
But like for real though?
Because yeah. Well, I that kind of struck
me as
a bit off
by that.
Because like New Jersey, like, you're not going to be like a born again Christian in like Italian North Jersey. It's like, I was like, instead you just be like, she's super Catholic. Don't bother.
Right, maybe she has converted to trad Cath, traditional Catholicism. But I think the question for me in that scene was, when he said, oh, she's a born again Christian, does that mean, oh, you're not going to fuck her? Or does it mean you're definitely going to fuck her? That seemed like the main question I had coming out of that scene. Because I could have interpreted it either way.
I interpreted it as you're never going to fuck her. And of course, I was wrong. Yeah. But it was confusing to me. But I have to say, though, she did exude some strong sexual energy.
Yeah, I think it was Barone being like, oh, I barked up that tree.
Yeah. You're barking up the wrong tree, like, Tony. Oh,
she won't debase herself or, you know, just a trash company manager. But, you know, the second she hears Tony Soprano's like heavy breathing.
Something about that. That's a natural aphrodisiac, as someone who's wheezing. But it actually leads me to a clip
that nose whistle just wets the panties all around the tri-state area.
Everyone loves a whistly nose, especially when you're wheezing into the back of your neck meat.
Yeah.
But it leads me to the sex scene between Tony and his secretary is one of the weirdest Sopranos sex scenes ever.
I thought it was a dream sequence at first for a number of reasons.
Well, one of the reasons I assume is because of the weird soundscape that's going on during the fucking. There's a dog barking while Tony is fucking her doggy style.
Uh-huh.
And it just has this weird thing to it where it felt like to me, like it was like as if Brian Wilson had of the Beach Boys had directed a Sopranos sex scene. It was just like adding animals to things. It was very strange to me. And I have a clip of what I think they were going for. So Vince, play Brian Wilson directs a Sopranos sex scene.
I suggest you talk about stress management with him.
It's a good thing
I haven't regretted you learning how to audio edit.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. I'm getting better at it, Vince. You have to admit, I'm getting kind of good at it.
I mean, you were good right away. So that's true. You know, with great power comes great responsibility kind of thing.
And I think I'm wielding that responsibility quite well.
Yeah, that was so much restraint in that.
Yes. I mean, I just found a lot of animal noises and I added to it. But to me, it's a very strange sex scene.
The dog. Why is there a dog tied up to a very short leash at like a trash company office?
It's a junkyard dog, man.
But it's not a junkyard, right? Are they at a junkyard?
I think it's just like if you're anything or like a junkyard, you just need a dog barking out there.
Yeah.
My assumption was what you said, Bobby, was that this was a junkyard dog. But then I had the same question that you had, Vince, which is like, but this is an office. This isn't a fucking junkyard.
Also, if you have a junkyard dog, don't you usually have it off the leash so it can bite people when they jump the fence? Like, you don't have it tied up to a thing.
It's just so confusing because you're just
maybe the junkyard dog, like, summers at the office.
Oh, it was a temp dog?
Or they rotate them, you know, like, yeah, you don't want to wear him out, spending all his time at the junkyard. You want to give him, you know, some shore leave at the office.
It was so confusing to me to watch like what I think is a hot sex scene, in my opinion. Like it's like Sopranos has weird sex scenes for sure, but this was one that I was kind of like.
Just the way his blue boxer shorts are around his ankles while he's sitting on an office swivel chair.
Right, yeah. If there's one thing I love about Tony Soprano is that even when he's fucking, he has to be seated, you know, because he has to be in total comfort at all times.
It's all about how, you know, everyone's lazy, man. That's the theme of this episode.
That is, yeah, you're right. Can't even stand up to have sex. He's having sex from behind, which is already like maybe the easiest position to have sex in, and he's still... is just like, well, I got a fucking nice office chair. What am I going to not use it? Good for him. But
and she was doing most of the work on that one, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. But yeah, weird dog in the background, kind of strange. And, you know, Tony is dealing with the fact that he is, you know, bored as shit. And that he wants to be back where the action is. You know, he's got a phone call at some point from Syl and... you know, Pauly and Big Pussy and the others, like this shipment of World War II memorabilia. Memorabilia is probably not the wrong word to use, but it's like...
No, it's... you know, Big Pussy was just wearing some Nazi memorabilia.
Yeah.
And like Tony wanted to do that too.
He had an authentic yellow star signed by Himmler.
Signed by Anne Frank. Yeah, but it was like... He wanted to hang out with his friends and do fun Nazi stuff, but like
that's how you knew that Tony was depressed, because he couldn't even enjoy World War II memorabilia, because that's usually like his favorite thing.
Well, I don't think it was, to me, I didn't read that as he's depressed. That's why he's
staying away. I get it. Yeah, that was him following the lawyer's advice.
Sad that Neil Mink told him he can't do that.
Right. His lawyer told him to stay away from, like, you know, getting your hands dirty on some stuff. And, like, he can't be in a stolen, you know, shipping crate filled with Nazi stuff. How's that going to look in the paper?
Yeah, that's also why I really like his first panic attack of the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. That was a great scene, because, like, have you guys ever, like, worked in, like an office where, like, people really care about? So it's, like, I've been to those, like, office parties where people are talking about, like, the biz, and I'm just I am here to get drunk and not think about work.
Yeah.
And Tony's there, and, like, I think, you know, like, you know, whenever he has a panic attack, we're all trying to figure out what it is. And I think for in that scene, you know, it wasn't just Richie, but it's also the fact that, like, he's so bored, and he wanted to join the mafia. So we have to do this shit. And he's around all these, like, pudgy guys who look like him, wearing khakis and their you know, employee polo shirt tucked in, talking about, like, the latest brand of dumpsters at this country club. And he's just like, what the fuck am I getting myself into?
I also think there was an angle that, you know, him having to play middle manager, where he has to take Richie aside and get mad at him. And it's really relatable that, like, nothing makes you angrier at a person than that person forcing you to, like, be the angry person. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, when you have
forcing someone into the position of, like,
it's like when someone owes you money and it's like, you're gonna make me ask you for it. Like, don't make me, like, have to.
Right.
Like, you're turning me into the nag, you know? Like, that's the worst.
Yeah, and, like, Tony definitely, you know, is what's makes him more annoyed is the fact that, like, Richie is no longer in this position where he can just, like, you know, yell at him and whatnot and just kind of, like, well, I'm the boss, whatever. Like, he's about to become family. And I have a clip from that scene between Richie and Tony where Tony's yelling at him, and this precedes him passing out from a panic attack.
All right.
Phil Coke, what is the big deal? You're my uncle. You want to deal drugs, it's your business. You do it on association garbage routes, it's my fucking business. It stops today. You got it? Don't give me your fucking Manson lamps. Just fucking stop. Another thing, don't tip a truck on a problem customer. You know, I fucking hate the way you make me fucking ride you. Now get the fuck out of here.
Tony doesn't get enough credit for his, you know, accurate observations and jokes. And Manson lamps, solid. I'd put that in a review.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, just especially given the fact that that is probably Richie's number one go-to weapon. Just a fucking evil stare into someone's soul where you're just like, I mean, if it were me, I would fucking crumble under the stairs.
Because you look at him and you're like, why would I be scared of this 5'3", like pudgy, old Italian
man?
Yeah, middle-aged Italian dude. And then he stares at you and you're like, oh shit, I don't know what this guy's capable of.
Yeah, because he's got the eyes of someone who's like, oh fuck, is he going to try to fuck me? Like, that's like the feeling I get.
Like, even when he's like happy and smiling, like in one of our favorite scenes where he gives Tony like Feach LaManna's jacket, like he's like so happy, and you look at his eyes, and he still looks like a fucking psycho.
He's got a very psycho demeanor to him. Manson Lamps, I think, was fucking perfect. But yeah, right then, Tony looks around and notices that he's not only fucking, you know, middle management or basically management for his, you know, soprano crime family, but also working with these schmucks who are all in the trash business. And I think that the combination of both of those things,
reading waste news, that was a bit of a stretch that there's a newspaper that he reads the waste news.
I mean, you know, it's there's probably fucking trade newspapers for that shit.
There's definitely a trade pub that like those guys like, hey, did you guys see the latest in, you know, Waste Quarterly?
Do you think they give that job to like a mobbed up nephew to write the newsletter, or does that mobbed up nephew force some nerd to write it for him?
Nah, that's like you graduated from
a really
like,
bad
Rutgers
school
with a C average and a communications degree.
Yeah, it is.
And you're like, what can
degree
I do? What's a job I can work at 20 hours a week and smoke pot in a Honda Civic after?
Yeah.
Waste news.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, you know, good journalism is good journalism. Let's, you know,
can
credit
we,
where credit is due.
Can we pivot slightly to Melfi? I feel like this is the episode where Melfi actually like got interesting to me.
Yes,
100%. All it took was her taking shots of Belvedere in between patients.
Oh, man. It was fantastic. Yeah, for sure. Fucking, you know, drunk Melfi is best Melfi. Like her drinking between sessions and then doing sessions with Tony Soprano, like completely drunk, is fantastic. And I gotta say, it is some of the best drunk acting I think I've ever seen.
Yeah,
like it is, it's perfect, it's subtle, it's not like, you
I kind of thought
doesn't...
she was bad in this series a little bit before this episode, and then this one, like, she really crushed it.
Yeah, it's interesting because like upon like when you first watch the show, you are a lot more sucked into a lot of the psychiatry aspect because it's so novel. It's so like, oh, this is, you know, this is a good premise for a show, right? But then, you know, doing a rewatch, you're kind of like, yeah, the Melfi stuff. I don't know. Is she even that good? I don't know. And then you watch this episode and you're like, God, Lorraine Bracco can fucking act. I have a clip of drunk Melfi.
What's the matter? You still in mourning over the coming of managed care?
Go on.
What's the point? I mean, it's all a series of distractions till you die.
I hear depression talking.
Medication. What do I got to show for it?
Who knows where you'd be without the medication? Anyway, some people take pleasure in the simple doing of things.
I don't know if you noticed at the very end of the clip, she goes, yeah, the simple doing of thingas.
Yeah, that was
so subtle.
Yeah.
But it's just so fucking perfect. And, you know, she's clearly having like this crisis where she is like, you know, whether or not she's an alcoholic, you know, remains to be seen, but she's clearly having some severe alcohol problems. And it culminates in one of my all-time favorite, say it's my favorite scene in The Sopranos, in this episode, but it's my one of the like top five Melfi scenes.
Yeah.
Because it's her, because that's the thing, every Melfi scene that's outside of the Sopranos family, that's not with Tony and whatnot, is always a glimpse into her fucking just insufferable
awful life.
Her insufferable world with every insufferable character that she constantly surrounds herself with. And in this case, it's the return of her shitty son, who is just
the worst fucking guy.
The worst, dude. And
like when he's talking to his mom at dinner about like what he's saying, like he kind of sounds like Napoleon Dynamite almost.
Yeah.
He's like,
yeah.
God, mom.
I told you.
Jared, it was last semester. I'm on the con now.
Yeah. And I have a clip from it. And it like, so it starts out with this horribly pretentious conversation about what his class is, and a terrible joke, and then followed by another terrible joke from his son, and then her just deciding to lib out on a smoker, which is like, of course she would do that. She is the most like, it's funny because it's like, it's very like New Yorker, but because it's Jersey, it's just more trashy.
It's a little less refined, but still it's kind of like the nanny state liberal, but like way more aggressive.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's a New Jersey nanny state liberal. Exactly. And it's a long clip, but I love it.
I'm also going to play a sting before that, because I think this falls heavily into this category.
It's the 90s. Parents are supposed to discuss sex with their children. It's the 90s. The 90s.
Yes, it absolutely is very, very 90s. And it's, it's one of the few 90s things in this episode that, just real quick, they also include a Home Alone reference, a Sliding Doors reference, and a reference to the movie Seven.
Also, Diagnosis Murder on the TV.
Oh, yeah.
And I will say Junior's, the woman helping out Junior, had a very 90s haircut. I'm not like the Dallas Sassoon. I can't really describe it that well, but just she looked like she would be a love interest on Friends.
She looked like Amy Smart in Road Trip a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. And then also the book club discussing
Angela's Ashes.
Tis the follow up to Angela's Ashes, which I love, by the way. That's a fucking great book. But so here's Melfi.
So, how's that English class going? Comparative literature, whatever?
Comp Lit was last semester. I told you I'm taking Lacan. Deconstructive theory.
Ooh, deconstructivist. And your grandfather a contractor. Deconstructivism.
Ah. Mind your old mom.
Shut the fuck up, kid.
Excuse me, could you move your cigarette?
Pardon me?
It's blowing into my son's face. Thank you.
We're allowed to smoke.
Unfortunately, an area where New Jersey is woefully behind. But could you move it?
Mom, it's no big deal.
It's no big deal to move it either.
I don't think so.
I'm sorry?
I'm not gonna move it.
Why not?
Because you're very rude.
I said excuse me quite clearly.
Your tone?
It's a health hazard. Move it.
No.
I'm a physician. Do you know what you're doing to the rest of us? My son has taken the trouble in his own life to live in a smoke-free dorm.
My salutations.
Mom?
This isn't a smoke-free restaurant.
Look, this is silly. Could you just move the fucking thing?
Not when you talk like that.
Just move the cigarette, please.
No.
No?
No.
Mama!
Well,
you bitch.
She must be drunk.
Excuse me, what did you say?
Ma'am, come on. I saw what happened. Let's just, shall we?
Will you call the police?
I don't think that's warranted, but ma'am.
Oh no, please call the police, because I'm not the one with a lethal weapon here.
Ma'am.
Oh God.
I'd like you to leave.
Come on, Jason.
I'm out of here.
Just everything about that scene is wonderful.
It's so
Number
perfect.
One,
I mean,
she's not a physician.
No. Well, it also starts with her. I mean, I guess she can. She is, because she can prescribe medication.
Oh, because she's a psychiatrist.
Yeah. But like she, I love that, going back to how good of a drunk actor she is. Like the way her deacon, or the way her "your father a contractor" comment didn't really like line up. Like her timing was off with like the comment, and she like paused and then she had to explain the joke. Like that was perfect. And then the way the other woman's also kind of a bitch, where she's like, I love when people do that thing where you ask them something and then they like respond shittily and then you get mad and they're like, well, if you would have asked nicely, I would have done what you said. And it's no, the fuck you wouldn't. First of all.
Yeah. She perfectly captured like self-righteous four wine drunk.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And just like the idea of just being like, my son has taken the trouble in his life to avoid cigarette smoke at all costs. And just like the idea that somehow this, because it was at a time when like the idea of secondhand smoke was like, oh, secondhand smoke is worse than firsthand
that
smoke.
That fucking created a generation. Like, all that secondhand smoke propaganda created a generation of, like, the most obnoxious nanny state motherfuckers ever.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, and that's not to say that, you know, having someone smoke in your vicinity, you know, for some people is an annoyance. Fine. That's fine.
No, but it's fine. Grow the fuck up. Like, a little bit of smoke wafting towards you, like, oh my God, I'm being attacked. If you're in a crowded smoky bar, or if you're like sharing a car with them, that I get. Mm-hmm. But now, like these days, if someone's smoking outside, other people will get mad at them. And it's like, chill the fuck out. Everybody, like, find me one person who had issues because other people were smoking near them outside.
That restaurant was like an airplane hangar. Yeah. And her table was like maybe 5-10 feet away. It's like, yeah, you might have like a whiff of nicotine.
Right.
That is obviously drowned out by the 4 Monty Pulcianos that I've just been writing this now.
I would also like to know, like, there was a non-smoker's dorm and a smoking dorm in 2000. Is that a thing? Like, what?
No, that was the thing. I was in a dorm that was called a smoke and drug free dorm, which it was very confusing.
How'd that work out for you?
Oh, no. I mean, I did a lot of drugs in it, but that's half the fun.
Yeah.
It's kind of like shooting next to those like gun free zone signs. The other thing that I do love about that scene is the fact that, you know, number one, someone just goes, she must be drunk, which is like, I mean, I don't know if you would know that from someone throwing something in your face. So some people in New Jersey fight completely sober. Yeah. But also,
prostitution whore.
Yeah. but then at some point, the person, you know, he goes, ma'am, I've asked you to leave. There's a long pause. And Melfi says, okay, let's go. And then her son goes, I'm out of here. Which, number one, you can't just be indignant and say, I'm out of here, when you had to wait for your mother to give you permission to leave, you fucking dweeb. Like, I hate that character so much.
Oh, it's a perfect Soprano scene because every person in it is like their own unique, like, flavor of terrible. Even you feel so bad for the waiter, but like the waiter comes up and she's like, I'm calling you to call the police. And he's really? Again? Not again with these.
Yeah. The idea that like, this is not the first time that night that someone has been like, call the police. And the other person said, call them. Do it. Call him. We'll talk to the police together.
You open a restaurant in New Jersey. That's what that's part of like the deal where it's like, know that, oh, you want to be a mayor in New Jersey? You're going to have to throw out at least 6 people. Pick a fight.
It's
Some
in the
fine. Be dressed in like pearls and a business suit, you know, like.
Yeah. It's in the fine print of the bank loan. Like, people let you know right away. Oh, yeah. By the way, once you open this restaurant, you're going to be kicking Guidos out left and right.
They have a drunk psychiatrist insurance policy that a restaurant can take out.
And by the way, I just looked it up. A psychiatrist is not a physician. As a physician implies medical doctor, and a psychologist or psychiatrist is a PhD, although they are able to, prescribe drugs. So she's lying about being a physician because she thinks it makes her point better. Anyways, Melfi, this is a really breakout Melfi episode, and I'm just was so pleased to enjoy that character again because it's been, you know, it's been a long time.
Yeah, and then
it's been a while.
Yeah.
Since I have enjoyed a Melfi scene. Okay.
So should we go to favorite scene, least favorite scene?
Yeah. So my favorite scene, as I wrote down, was Melfi libbing out on the lady for smoking.
Uh-huh.
And my least favorite scene, and I have a clip of it. It's called Nurse Makes a Funny. Very early on, when Junior is in the hospital, he gets visited by a marshal who puts his house arrest like ankle monitor back on his ankle.
I'm Michael McLuhan from the U.S. Marshal Service, here to reattach your electronic bracelet.
They give you the important jobs, huh?
Your name's really McLuhan?
Right.
So that makes you Marshal McLuhan.
What's the fucking joke?
That's like, a little David Chase flex.
Oh, yeah. That feels like the kid. That feels like Melfi's kid wrote that scene.
Right. I mean, yeah, it just, but why? I just didn't understand it. It didn't need to be there. It was just like, it just stood out where you're going like, I even went through the trouble of looking up Marshall McLuhan to see if like, because he's a philosopher, right?
Yeah.
And so I like looked it up to see if is like, is this related to the episode or in any way? And
he's a philosopher who gets quoted by dipshits like Steve Bannon to like make themselves sound intellectual, or they're like, yeah, you know, the medium is the message. And you're like, oh, okay, I don't know what the fuck that doesn't fucking mean anything. Like, that's the ultimate like philosopher, like coming in your own mouth.
He was like a philosopher who specialized in media critique, it seemed like, which to me does not track with what the episode's about.
He's probably
at all.
Just like proto Jordan Peterson complaining about fucking Disney princesses.
Right.
No,
but
I think like, no, Marshall McLuhan, he was kind of like he was one of those people that like ended up being parodied a lot. And like where it was like a professor of something totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's kind of what he was like. He was like, it's like, oh, I'm like this great intellectual, and I just like kind of watch TV all day. And
I mean, which is a great job. Don't get me wrong, I love it, but also
this is my first book, Sex, maybe Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs.
Well, maybe that's how it plays into the episode, because the episode's really about just wanting to be lazy all the time. And Marshall McLuhan's just like, you can be this, you know, I'm just
like
this genius who like, you know, sits on my ass and like watches TV and talks about what it means.
Yeah. I like it. That's a good theory.
Philosophers are the real mafia.
Yeah, exactly. The real gangster. Yeah. What are your favorite and least favorite, Vince?
Oh, mine? Okay. Well, these are very short, but I love the cutaway to the fat girl with art bangs dancing to Journey at the country club.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Like, I almost did, like, a full spit take on that one. I don't know why.
But it wasn't Journey. It was more than a feeling. It was Boston.
Oh, okay, yeah, same difference.
Really same difference.
And really. Then, yeah, Boston's just a East Coast Journey.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And then the other one was just, like, the pan away from the women talking about Frank McCourt, and she just says, oh, you know the Irish and their liquor.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Yeah,
that was good. And then my favorite scene, obviously the first scene, like Ben said, that's just such like a classic Scorsese-ish
one,
where you have like that killer soundtrack, the tracking shot, and just like doing some gangster stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's catnip, whatever, I don't care. I love that shit.
Yeah, it's good shit.
I will say, like, I wasn't a huge fan of the Junior plot, and I felt...
Yeah.
Like I other than getting his hand stuck in the garbage disposal, which is a great Junior thing, but it's like all scenes with him and the lady, it's just like, I don't think it really told us anything more about Junior.
Yeah, it's just like, know? Fuck her already, dude. You know?
I mean, the episode for Junior was essentially about how he's really horny and he still has particularly high standards for who's he's gonna fuck, because he meets Catherine Romano in the hospital after the stent, or doesn't meet. He, you know, sees her again.
She stalks him because she's so thirsty.
Yeah, so she is fucking thirsty.
She heard about him from
Bobby
and, you know, how he's a, you know, muff diver.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So she knows.
From Roberta Sanfilippo. Filippo.
Yeah. Yeah. He knows that she knows he eats pussy and obviously is very interested in him and makes him a nice regote. What is it?
Manicote.
Yeah. And you know, is meanwhile, like, Junior is not having it, and I think it's because he's mostly embarrassed by the fact that, like, she
age appropriate.
She's age appropriate. She's embarrassed also by he's embarrassed by his body being, you know, fucking broken down, and the fact that he's stuck inside. He's embarrassed that he's under house arrest. Meanwhile, he's trying to fuck whoever the fuck Roberta Sanfilippo is.
Yeah, oh, so you don't remember who that is? That's the girl whose pussy he ate and he smashed a pie in her face.
Oh, that's Roberta.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. That, yeah, I didn't remember that was her name. But, yeah, at one point...
He went down on her. She spread, he ate her pie. She spread his business in the streets, and then he put her pie back in her face to.
Goddamn right.
Yeah.
Goddamn right. And yeah, so apparently he's been waiting for a call back from Roberta, who is not returning a phone call. And Bobby reported back on the fact that he ran into her buying a fountain. And I have a clip of that exchange.
When I ran into her fountains away in that time, she was very cold.
What was she buying?
Fountain. Kid pissing.
Must have bought a house. Great ass.
Because she got a great ass. And you got your head all the way up it. Listen, I'm going to go. Got to take my kid to karate.
Yeah, so.
You cut out the best part of that scene.
Which one? That she's down for anything?
No.
Which part?
Yeah, down for anything. You know, great ass, you know, such a blabbermouth, or what did he call
her? Yeah.
I think, yeah, I know, so, in the other episode he called her a blabbermouth cunt, and this one he said never shuts her yap or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, yeah, but she, yeah, something like that. She fucks with the best of them or something great.
Yeah, down for whatever.
It was very worth it just to have that great Al Pacino clip in there.
Sure.
So yeah, he's horny and he's like hitting on, you know, the nurse who's helping him put on his sleep apnea mask. He's just trying to fuck. He's stuck inside. He's trying to fuck. I mean, he's dealing with his mortality. He gets his fucking hand caught in the garbage disposal, which is one of like. Kind of one of the sweetest Soprano family scenes ever. Remember when Tony was asked to describe a beautiful memory of their family to Melfi, and he describes like this like scene where everyone like fights and everyone gets hit, and she's all like kind of like put off by it and goes like, and that's a happy memory to you. I realize I have now become Tony Soprano, where this scene is basically like, it's, he has been stuck for 6 hours, stuck standing up, yelling in what must have been a horrifying experience for him, thinking, fuck, am I gonna die like this? And it's just the sweetest scene ever, where Richie like just helps him like lube up his hand to get it out, and he keeps going, you're flexing. go limp, you're flexing. It's just very cute, and you see Janice, you know, kind of looking at it, and I don't know, it just it brought up a lot of happy feelings. So I did enjoy that a lot. And of course Junior then does finally decide to settle on Catherine Romano coming over. And of course, as soon as he does, somehow through the fucking grapevine, Livia Soprano calls him up to get the scoop.
Hello.
Corrado?
What the fuck are you doing calling my home?
Now listen, I am the only person in this family who doesn't curse. So just do me the favor. I want to see how you're feeling. Is that so horrible?
I'm fine.
And I heard you're keeping company with that Catherine Romano.
Oh, fuck. Never you mind about that.
Ah, oh, she's so sweet. I remember my Johnny told me. She let him feel her up behind the Sons of Italy Hall.
Listen, Livia, what you don't know could fill a book.
I do love that Livia, like, never misses an opportunity to deny someone in her family of happiness.
Yeah.
And also never misses an opportunity to denigrate someone who is clearly a better person than her. You know, she hates Catherine Romano for probably no reason. But you know, that's
Catherine Romano was once nice to her.
And right.
She wants to know, like, what's her game?
Yeah.
What's the angle on that one?
Exactly. She's up to something.
Yeah. And then my least favorite was the emergency room doctor getting offended by like Tony being upset about his illness, like where she pouts. I'm like, I don't see, there's no fucking chance an emergency room doctor in New Jersey gives a flying fuck what Tony Soprano is upset about.
See, that's why I thought she was a nurse, because she was so unprofessional. wasn't sexism.
Popular take. No, but it did lead to that joke where she just, you know, looks at him deadpans like, you lose some weight.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then walks out. I mean, that was pretty brutal and devastating. I was a big fan of that line, but yeah, I could see that. I mean, you know, I think we both have some least favorite scenes of people just kind of like in the medical profession just doing bad jokes.
yeah.
Yeah, it was a very
this was before Ken Jeong, you know. This was like the first example of the funny doctor character.
They were trying out funny doctor characters and failing miserably. Yeah, there's a lot of doctors in this episode. It's a very doctor heavy episode. And eventually in this episode, Tony, you know, hears about basically the shark metaphor from Melfi and realizes that the only way that he can stop passing out is if he goes to Satriali's and scratches his itch with a fucking shoe shiner and then and then yells at random teenagers who are driving too fast in the neighborhood. Like,
well, it's like if you're a gangster, you're not living your life unless, you know, you're standing on a street corner like commenting on passersby.
Yeah, right.
The whole point of the episode is like how much fun it is just for like guys to be dudes.
Yeah.
And
dudes
play
rule.
Cards and rub your rash with the shoe polisher.
Yeah, it is definitely like an interesting thing because he can't, like, all of this, the stuff that he does, like when he's in the office of fucking Barone Sanitation, is not all that different from he leads the same boring life either way. Like, the boredom still exists. It's just a little bit more bearable when he is with his, you know, scumbag friends. And I think that's a beautiful message.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it's because, like, you get into the mafia because you can't, like, you can't put in 40 hours a week doing something else so you can hang out with your friends. Like, you'd literally
rather
all
die.
Your time just hanging out with your friends, doing nothing. Chewing the shit. There can't be like anything getting in the way of that unless it's like a cool crime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
not women, not a job, not your family. Yeah. Like, your real family is the dudes who stand around on the corner busting balls with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, he's a shark who has to keep moving forward. And sometimes for some sharks, certain species, moving forward looks a lot like sitting on your lazy ass outside of a pork store and doing nothing. And, you know, talking sports. And hey, whatever shark that is, that's a cool fucking shark.
If
shark
he
would, they should make a show out of.
Yeah, if he hadn't gone and hung out at the waste management company for a while, he would have never got to fuck that born again Christian from the comfort of his office chair.
Yeah, you know, like silver lining there. Yeah. You know,
but you got to think about the lost opportunities at the Bing.
I know. Yeah. You think about how many other born again Christians he could have fucked while he was hanging out at the Bing and fucking. I got to say, in general, watching Tony fuck is interesting because he is like a giant Rottweiler.
Yeah. It's like watching an animal do it somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got the sexual energy of a Rottweiler, and you definitely like.
I would go with a bulldog because of the breathing problems.
For sure, for sure. He's got, I mean, it could be some sort of mix. You know, he's a mixed breed. He's a rot bull. But yeah, in general, I was a pretty big fan of this episode, even though it kind of like fit into that, you know, less about moving the plot of the season forward and more about kind of like
it's
Soprano
kinda like,
family in general.
Yeah, it's kind of like a six-man episode, you know, where it's like the next episode is like a kind of a classic all-timer, but you can't have all those. You need some just like ones where it's like you show the characters more, but you still move along the plot.
Yeah.
With kind of the exception of like the junior stuff, which I didn't really think went anywhere or really did much for him. It did all that. Like, it fleshed out Tony more. It fleshed out Richie more. And it brings them closer to a confrontation, which people are expecting in the next episode. And so it served that purpose. And like, it really, like you said, it was great for Melfi. Like, you get to see like Mel, like, kind of, it really lets Lorraine Bracco, like, do a really good job there. And yeah. So it's like, that was really nice to see, too. So, no, like, it's a good episode. Like, it's not, like, a classic, but it's, like, one of those episodes that, like, makes the show as a whole really good.
Yeah.
It's very, I mean, it felt like The Irishman, you know, like, where mortality is the real gangsta, and and it's full of, like, pretender songs and people just, like, alternately doing jack shit and, you know, pondering their own deaths. So,
yeah. Yeah, in terms of the real gangster, I think Mortality is the real gangster. Idle Hands are the real gangster, and also the real gangster is the Declaration of Independence.
I would say Offices are the real gangster.
Oh, the real gangster is Offices, for sure. The reason I say the Declaration of Independence is because at one point he talks about how. It says they guarantee the pursuit of happiness. Yeah. And then he's like, why am I not happy? And she goes, well, it's the pursuit that's guaranteed. And he goes, always a fucking loophole. And that's because the Declaration of Independence, that's the real gangsta. Yeah. So all in all, good episode. I'm excited for the next one. We have two left in this season. You know, Bobby, thank you so much for coming on.
Before we go, any malapropisms we want to go over?
I don't remember any.
I couldn't find any.
Yeah.
Oh, there were two.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Look at that. So, you're doing better homework than we are.
Yeah. So one of them is kind of like when Richie tells Junior that Tony won't let him sell coke on the roots. He's like, what is this effrontery?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then... Yeah. The other one is when he's talking to Beansy about Beansy to Melfi. He's like, Tony's like, he's got piss into a cathode.
Yeah, that's right. Oh. He did. He did say cathode.
But I thought that was just a joke he was making.
No. Yeah, it was. He meant catheter. I remember hearing cathode and going, that's wrong. But then never. It didn't. Yeah, it did not. Compute, but that's great. Yeah, no, you know, this episode or this series always has a nice little you know, sprinkling.
It'll throw in those little ones, you know, to show everyone that these guys really aren't that bright.
To keep you honest, not, you know, gotta keep
they're not smart,
attention.
Dude. Yeah,
yeah. Like Tony will throw in Manson Lamps. It's like, wait, is this guy like? Is there more of this guy than we thought? And then yeah, also throw in pee into a cathode. And it's like, nah, not really.
Nah, he's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Vince, did we get any voicemails or anything?
Oh yeah, that's thank you for reminding me. We did actually.
Oh great.
We got a couple. So here's the first one.
Hey, Matt and Vince, I had a Sopranos comment. I was gonna leave this for the last episode, but you guys recorded it sooner than I thought you would. I was hoping you guys would comment on the really, really weird shirt that Carmela's wearing in the very last scene. It's a white shirt. And it has a bunch of pictures of purses on it, but they're not like name brands or anything like that. It's literally just like a labeling guide, like an Audubon Society field guide for purses. And I was so distracted by the shirt, I couldn't focus on what was happening in that scene. And I think it's funny. Like, first off, it's funny if Carmela bought that herself, because it's such a perfect shirt for like a person who's truly white trash but has money now. But it's also funny to think that like either Tony or AJ bought that for her as like a Mother's Day gift, because they knew she liked purses. It feels very much like a gift from a grandmother that you would get as a kid. So anyway, all right, keep up the good work. Thank you.
Yeah, it's very much like, oh, what should I get my mom? Well, women do be shopping.
AJ sees that at Hot Topic and he's like, oh, my mom will love that.
Yeah, that's for sure the thinking of a kid is going like, I know my mom likes purses, so for her birthday, I'll get her a shirt with purses on. That's kind of genius. No, I didn't even notice that shirt when it happened.
Yeah, I didn't either, actually.
Yeah, good catch.
Yeah, here's our other voicemail.
Hi, Matt and Vince. This is Max. Listener since episode 4, love Pod Yourself a Gun, super good, love Sopranos, guys are great, San Francisco legends, where I live, where I grew up. Anyway, after listening to today's episode, the Bust Out episode, I read a little further on Robert Eiler's Wikipedia page than I had previously, an AJ's actor. I found a very important piece of information. If you did not already know this, I don't believe you've referenced this on the run of the show. Robert Eiler, in the night of July 4th, 2001, and some of his shitbag friends, robbed a couple of tourists in New York City on the Upper East Side and were later arrested for it like total fucking idiots. And he got caught with cash that they stole and a bag of weed in his pocket. And he pled guilty to it and was let out under probation. Just saying. Very important. And central perhaps to the Robert Eiler extended universe out in real life. Anyway, cheers. Love you. Good night.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That means, because I remember that he got in trouble with the law for some bullshit later on, and there's like a Robert Eiler mugshot. But 2001, that means tourists got robbed by Fat AJ.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like,
and that,
no, he was doing
don't
hood
tell you.
He likes doing hood rat shit with his friends.
They didn't tell you that tourist was Mohammed Atta.
That is fucking insane. That is like because you see him as like a when he's like a little bit older, like, you know, an 18-year-old or even like a fucking 17-year-old, and like he's thinner. I don't know, like he's kind of like getting robbed by 2001 Robert Eiler is like getting robbed by a juggalo in middle school. It's like imagine this, the look on your face when that's the kid who's robbing you. Holy fuck.
He probably peed on the wall right next to there, and then the cop like convinced him that
they had his DNA.
DNA.
Oh man, I wonder if if this was like if he's always been kind of sociopathic, or if this was just one of those days. All right, Bobby, thank you so much for coming
Thanks
on the show.
For having me. Yeah,
we really appreciate it.
Yeah, Bobby Big Wheel on Twitter. Also, I am the actor Michael Imperioli. I was also in that scene in Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm. You're Spider.
Yeah, I was Spider. Check it
out. Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah. Thank you for the phone calls from our Podsiglieri's, which I just now remembered is the name of our fans. Vince, thank you so much for being my co-host, dude. I couldn't do this without you.
Thank you.
I fucking love you, dude. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Email us at fraudcast@gmail.com. Patreon.com/fraudcast if you want to get bonus episodes where we talk about other things, movies and such. Vince, what is a Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.